One of my offering questions is how to make goodness as riveting as evil. Because evil is inherently riveting just in our bodies. One of my great aspirations was like, yes, interview people who are good and wise, which never means perfect, and really get into the complexity of that and like what that means to live that and the drama of that, so that that too can be riveting.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. I'm so excited to talk with a spiritual seeker. And this is someone who has been a hero of mine in the way she has showed how to dig deeper with people who have amazing paths. I'm with Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And with one of our student producers, Aaliyah Ebert.
Hey, everyone.
So we had the great pleasure of having Krista Tippett in studio. She started a podcast years ago called Speaking of Faith, and then that turned into On Being. It's been on National Public Radio and a podcast. It was really lovely to actually have a few moments to sit down and tape a one-on-one interview where I got to ask her the questions.
And there's so much to talk to Krista Tippett about. She's a Peabody Award-winning broadcaster, a National Humanities Medalist, a New York Times bestselling author. At one time, she was a journalist and diplomat in Cold War Berlin, and she received a Master of Divinity from Yale. She's got three books out, most recently, Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living.
When someone makes a big impact on the world, you often look for like signs in the heavens around their birth or whatever it might be. But she had pretty small town beginnings. And so I wanted to know where all of this started.
I think about this a lot these days. You know, now because the world kind of comes to everyone wherever they are through the internet, I think it's hard to imagine back what it was to live in a small town 60 years ago. Mm. Because the world out there to me was just this big mystery. And I wouldn't even say that I was that curious about it until I got a bit older. So I think it was possible to be isolated in a way that it's hard to be isolated now, probably for better and for worse, you know, that there's an upside to that. So I think, yes, that I had leapt into that void and made a world out there would have been really shocking, but I hope intriguing to my younger self. I've had so many wonderful opportunities, you know, partly good fortune, and then also I'm trying to get better at giving my younger self credit, you know, having some chutzpah. But I think coming from that small place that was far away from the world and isolated in that way made me so appreciative. And I mean, to this day, you know, I never take it for granted that I get to move around in such a wide world. Mm.
And you did take a leap when you said, I'm going to Europe for education and then continue to work there.
Yeah.
When did you get that idea of, I've got to explore a little bit bigger?
In high school, I think what opened my mind more than the schooling was the kind of drama and debate that I did. I think that's what kind of opened my creative, curious side. And I went to summer debate camp in Chicago the summer before my senior year in high school. And I met all these kids who had had such a different upbringing from me. And they were all going away to college, which really had not been a concept. And so, you know, that was the beginning, because I had this best friend in Chicago that summer who wanted to go to Brown. And I had never heard of Brown. And in the end, you know, there were 50 kids in her school applying, and I was the only person for miles around applying from where I was from. And so that was kind of the first leap. And then I really felt like, you know, then going to Germany, I just got interested in that whole Cold War division of the world. Because I'd grown up, you know, in a very immersively religious world as well. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was a real, like, hellfire and brimstone Southern Baptist preacher. So I kind of had this, I thought I had left this behind, you know, but it, to some extent, this idea of, you know, the battle between good and evil. But I think that the Cold War actually was just a great representation of that, you know.
And you were right there on the
front
line.
And I ended up kind of putting myself there. But I think in my religious imagination really was that it was a great canvas for that, for me to continue that in a way.
I wonder if I could explore just a little bit what you so often ask about spiritual beginnings, because they do plant some seeds. What was your concept of God or spirituality, you know, in those younger years?
It was immersive, and it was mostly wonderful, right? I mean, church was not just church. It was the center of social life. It was where friendships were based. It was really a world. It was the context of life, not just religion. My grandfather, you know, had a second grade education and was just this wonderful, actually very intelligent. I knew that he had a beautiful mind, and he loved his Bible. And I even think I intuited this at the time, although I probably wouldn't have been able to articulate it. I felt like he was frightened to apply his mind to his Bible, right?
Like what might happen if something cracked?
Yes. So when I finally went to seminary, which was a surprising thing to that me who went to Brown, that I would end up going to seminary 10 years later, and just loving theology and, you know, understanding, sort of digging your mind into sacred text was just a way to go deeper, right? And it could withstand critical questions, right? Like it was there for that. I feel like it was, for the most part, very fulfilling. And I did actually kind of ask my questions and find that the text and the community could hold those.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's a lot about my life and my spiritual life and my religious sensibility that is very different from my grandfather. But the thing that I'm aware of now at this point in my life that I'm so grateful for is I feel like he imparted me with this sense that has never left me that, you know, of course the world is a puzzling place, a mysterious place, but that somehow there is a love behind this. There is a love that holds this. And as I grow older, I realize what a gift it is to have that kind of grounding.
Do you find you can lean into that a little or rest into
that?
And
I'm also, you know, it's more mysterious than it's ever been before, right? But I can somehow hold it. It's true. And how to make sense of it, it's different on any given day.
At one point, you thought, I'm going to make a show.
Yeah.
And so post 9/11 and speaking of faith, what did you think that an audience needed?
Such a great question for me to reflect back on. So I had, you know, just walked into this world of high geopolitics, right, in my 20s, and had some incredible experiences and kind of been a journalist and come in through this side door of diplomacy. And I'm so grateful for all of that. I mean, it's just an incredible experience, incredible skill sets. But I also came out of those years pretty confused because it wasn't me. And where I wanted to go deeper was not that high level of the people moving the missiles around, which was important, but I was really, you know, asking this question of, you know, what is important? What is life with a capital L? What is important with a capital I? And I was fascinated by Berlin, which was really like taking this one people, one language, one history, one city, splitting it in half, where people on both sides of the wall are given completely different realities, even realities that have missiles pointed at each other, but totally different value sets, political systems, economic systems. And, you know, what I observed, because I came to know and love people on both sides of the wall, was really this elemental human drama of people either make lives of meaning or they don't. And I saw people on the Eastern side who did not have the freedom or the agency or just the space, but who created these lives of dignity and intimacy and beauty and value. And then people on the Western side who had everything, right? Freedom and all the materials and, you know, all the room to move in and didn't. What I think fascinated me was that human condition aspect of the Cold War. What happens to a human being in these different circumstances? What it still comes down to is whether we make lives of meaning that are worthwhile. What I eventually realized with that is that I wanted to study theology because this is the part of the human enterprise where that is interrogated.
Yeah.
And And I was also recovering my spiritual life and, you know, starting to read again. And initially I was kind of reading mystical texts and, you know, but just realizing that I wanted to take religion seriously for myself and also in the world as a force and as a place where this kind of inquiry and this kind of engagement happens. So when I came out of that, I had no idea that I could do anything with this theology degree. But to your question, what I carried into eventually this idea for a radio show was that I had gone deep in what is this part of us and the human enterprise,
yeah,
and realizing that it is so critical and is offering questions and resources and wisdom. And then in contrast, especially kind of starting in the 90s and into the 2000s, religion was just presented in mostly violent or exclusionary or inflammatory sound bites.
Yeah.
The disconnect for me was, we need this, right? And this is important in human life. And it runs through how everyone, you know, how people are present in all of these other activities. So I just wanted to have a place where there could be naming and conversation and exploration of, you know, this religious spiritual aspect of us, and then as it runs through all the other disciplines. And then in the early 2000s, you know, with having an evangelical president in the White House and then 9/11, suddenly religion is everywhere in the headlines again, often in a very simplified,
yes,
and destructive way.
Totally black and white.
Terrible. And so I wanted to get at the complexity of how this is lived and all the nuance in real life and with particularity, you know, the depths and particularity of the different traditions and what they actually offer up to the whole.
Looking at little snapshots from over your career, you do mention how stories are important, and they're important in journalism, but they're often only used in a one-dimensional way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, I think I would say there's an art to what you do, because you do want to tell stories, but you're finding a way to not just report facts, but to explore the meaning.
Yeah, I think we've kind of made an idol of storytelling, you know, like if it's a story, if there's a story. Stories are these precious ways we have to convey truth, but I'm also interested in the, okay, so what? So that's the story. So what? What does it mean? What do we do with that? Why does it matter? One of the things people said to me in public radio at the beginning, for years, you know, I would show them statistics like 98% of Americans say they pray, whether they're religious or not. This is a huge part of life. And they say, well, maybe that's true, but I don't think public radio listeners, I don't think public radio listeners are religious, which is absurd. Or if they are, they want to keep it private. Mm. Well, that wasn't true. And, you know, another thing that was interesting from the beginning of the show is we always had a lot of listeners who were atheist or agnostic or somehow alienated from their traditions or, you know, in a place of confusion. I think what it did for people like that is allow them into the moral deliberations that are so alive in our time, and that they had felt kind of separated and cut off from that. What I always have tried to do is not just interview people about what they know and what they do, like what they know and what they do maybe is important, but also how that connects to who they are and how they live. And also not just be focused on the answers people have, which, you know, we're just so focused on answers and opinions. That's generally what people get drawn out about in media. But like, what are the questions they live? And what are the questions that have arisen through what they've learned?
By doing that, you are presenting listeners with possibilities, like here are how some other people are experiencing this spiritual portion of their life.
Yeah. We can be talking to somebody who's very wise and possibly very accomplished, but also meeting them in the fullness of their humanity never looks heroic.
We all have to brush our teeth.
That's right. And we all have had a lot of things go wrong. So one of the things that troubled me in journalism that was another kind of flowing into this was how, you know, journalism is so sophisticated at analyzing and articulating the worst case exemplar of humanity or the catastrophic event or the person who really does something evil, right? they're so good at like giving thousands of words to that, investigating. But when you would have a piece about a person who is good, right, or had done something beautiful, it would be this hero piece, you know? And I actually really don't like that language of hero. And, you know, one of the things that I learned to love about the Hebrew Bible when I went to divinity school, which I don't think I got when I was growing up, was there are no heroes in the Hebrew Bible, right? Like, everybody is flawed and three-dimensional, technicolor, like, dramatic. Uh-huh. And so those hero stories actually don't do justice. So one of my questions, one of my operating questions for this show is how to make goodness as riveting as evil? Because evil is inherently riveting just in our bodies.
Yeah.
Because our bodies, which, you know, we're learning more and more about this, like, our bodies are really always trying to keep us safe, and they are always looking for danger. And then when we get served up a story about danger, like, we just go there. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of my great aspirations was like, yes, interview people who are good and wise, which never means perfect, and really get into the complexity of that and like what that means to live that and the drama of that, so that that too can be riveting. And I think, yes, like encouraging and inspiring, but in a way that feels like, oh yeah, like there are ways that person has lived that I can live that way too.
Are there guests you might have had who might have fit into that category, but maybe they weren't willing to be as forthcoming about some of the dents and dings? How do you narrow in on this will be a good person?
In the beginning, I had to figure this out. I haven't interviewed many politicians. And also, I'm pretty light on religious leaders because they are often in a position of representing a group.
Right.
And therefore, can't just speak in a just searching way for themselves, and academics often. But what I'm looking for is somebody who can speak out of the depth of their knowledge, but also can be go into places that might be revealing and searching.
Yeah.
People who can be really comfortable speaking at that intersection, you know, again, of like what they know and who they are, what they've learned, what they know, and the questions they still are working with.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry, and you're listening to In Good Faith. Back with more in just a moment. Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but you still want to stay informed? Well, you are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking and understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and can challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm speaking with Krista Tippett of On Being. I mean, there's people you have spoken with who we would know their names, Thich Nhat Hanh and others that we'd gravitate to because we know something about. But it's so intriguing to me that when you get this hugely meaningful interview from someone that you have to sort of introduce to us.
Yeah. And
there was a Persian poet, in fact, this may have been the episode about Rumi that you, I think, won the Peabody Award for.
Yeah, Fetame Kashavars.
And as I was listening, I was thinking, there is so much background that has been winnowed through to get to this clarity that you were sharing with us. Mm. But also your guest, a poet herself. Mm-hmm. I just thought, how did these two connect? I mean, you did the work to do that, and it really created something connecting for me to both Rumi from, you know, the 1300s to her sitting there right there arguing with her family about Persian poetry.
Yeah. You know, sometimes people have asked me across the years, what's your list of people you most want to interview? Uh-huh. And I did have that list. Like, Desmond Tutu was at the top of that list for a long time. I finally got him. But at some point, that list fell away because I am always looking for the people who are just below the radar, but who are just so formative and meaningful for people in their world or in their discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way. I'm not looking for the heroes who like make the news, but the people who are just imprinting lives around them and teaching and being role models in ways that, you know, most of us will never see, because these are the people who are making the world go around.
Don't people tell you sometimes,
Thank you for modeling how to have a discussion on touchy subjects.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a service you're providing to show people you can talk about these topics and create light instead of heat, or at least a little more of one than the other.
But you know, I don't think it's as hard as people imagine it to be. I really think it's about the creation of an ethos. I feel like one of the most important things to me is creating an atmosphere of hospitality in my interviews, intellectual hospitality. The thing is, we live in bodies, right? Mm-hmm. So a conversation between two people starts before the words are spoken in terms of how you start, you get relaxed or not. You feel safe or you feel like, okay, I need to be on guard. And creating an ethos of you're here because I respect you, and we may get into complicated, important things, but in a spirit of wanting to understand.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you something I've never asked anyone, because so sometimes people will ask me, how do you know what to ask people? And I say, well, you prepare, and then sometimes something just comes to you. But if I had to actually, without covering anything up, say, what is the most helpful to me, it is, I often feel that I love the people that I'm talking with, which sounds a little weird, like not like a fan or could we go have dinner, but the people who are willing to be open, I just feel like I love them. And you talk about love as well as this undergirding thing that holds us up. And that's something I feel in your conversations.
I definitely feel that. I mean, you and I are also fortunate because we get to choose who we interview.
Oh, that's,
and we look for people who we might just, you know, feel gravitate towards. People who are in news journalism or news interviewing, you know, you are given who you interview because of what happened today or yesterday.
Yeah.
And we get to hold the space for those people who we want to know more about what they have to say. We respect and admire, intrigued by, and we feel like, right? I think I choose people who I think other people would like to know they exist and understand the way they are in the world.
What do you know now, spiritually, that you didn't know 30 years ago about God or the divine or...
Yeah. What do I know about God? I know that word is very small for what we're pointing at. My grandfather, part of his fear of engaging his mind or of asking questions also was a fear of mystery. He felt like it was supposed to be about answers and rules.
Certainty.
Certainty. Mm. Something that really intrigues me at the Orthodox core of our traditions is this reverence for mystery. On the one hand, we are called to be discerning truth and living by truth. And then we're also in the depths given to know that there are things we won't fully understand in this lifetime. And I think that sense of mystery as something to revere has just become more big and beautiful for me. And it doesn't contradict the places of certainty that I have. So I think that's a big one. For me, it's been interesting because, you know, I didn't know when I started out that poets would be so interesting to me.
Right.
And I also didn't know that I would interview so many scientists. And one of the things I love about interviewing scientists, and again, I'm choosing my scientists, right? Like I'm choosing the scientists who will open themselves to this kind of conversation. But they're often not religious, you know. But they have such a robust vocabulary of mystery and they welcome it. They welcome the fact that once you've made a big discovery, the very next thing that is upon you are the new questions you have to ask. And there's something really exciting about that.
Have you had moments where you suddenly felt that something bigger, that it's hard for us to explain, but we sense this presence or there was something bigger moving or going on? I mean, it sounds a little small to ask. As you look back, do you see that you were led or prepared or have a sense of mission?
Yeah. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question quite so directly. I do.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking a lot these days about the language of calling and vocation. Mm. I just think to be alive now in this century, there are just these civilizational callings. I feel like we have all these things that are reckonings, like race and ecology. And really, I feel like we have to reinvent politics and economics, right? Like we really have to reinvent everything. And they are reckonings and they're crises and they're challenges and they're callings. But I think this work of getting into discernment about what is mine to touch, What is the world I can see and touch and where I can be present? Because all these civilizational callings, interestingly, also have a really intimate component. You know, they all affect us in very direct ways in our lives. So I'm just saying that because I think about that a lot these days. And I think that I definitely think I got that kind of vocabulary and sensibility growing up. And as much as I might have thought I had left it behind, I think it was embedded in me. And I think vocation is also this interesting interplay between with effort. It's not just that these things land with you and you step into them, right? That there's the
you might be called to pursue them. Maybe.
Yeah. There's what's given to you, there's what's shown to you, there's the things you step into, and then there's what you do with that. Right. And so it's always this back and forth. And maybe, you know, my upbringing, my Southern Baptist upbringing also, like, you know, gave me this, you know, this sense of being of service, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really valuable. And that's another piece of, like, language and sensibility that I feel like our religious traditions carry forward in our life together, mm-hmm. that our whole life together needs, whether people are religious or not, right? Like, this is such a contribution and a gift. But yeah, I mean, I remember early on, somebody asked me if I considered this work to be calling or vocation. And I said, yes, but I think I said, if not a calling to preach, but to listen.
What a great line.
Yeah, well, that's where a question can be such a gift, because I really just kind of walked forward with that. I think that's my calling, my sacred calling, right, is listening. I was always very impatient when I was young. And everything feels so immediate and existential, right, for the first half of life. And then you live a while and you realize actually life is long and complex, and often the things that you think you want, they're going to teach you by not being what you wanted after all, right? It's so much more complicated than you think it is. And so I would say a real gift to me, because I had to fight so hard to get my show on public radio and then really to get it taken seriously, you know, even for 10 years. There's such value in, like, doing something over a long stretch of time in terms of this seeing of the calling and what it meant and why it matters. Like, that's not something that reveals itself immediately. That's something I'm, like, taking in now at 20 years.
So there's a time you may have thought, am I just knocking on the wrong door?
Yeah, you don't know. And I think at some point, I mean, this is true of calling too, you have to believe, you have to know what you know, and you have to walk forward, and there will be obstacles, and there will be people who don't get it. Probably more of them than the ones who get it. But there's really a reward, right? Like, the reward is in the sticking with it and in the growing with it.
You've had a transition from Speaking of Faith to On Being. Mm-hmm. And now what's the name of the poetry podcast?
Well, the poetry podcast is Poetry Unbound. That's my colleague, Padre Gotuma, who does that. Although poetry is a really important part of On Being
and if
well.
I could talk about Mary Oliver, because this, I mean, just that interview, I've listened to it at least 3 times.
Yeah.
And first of all, I just thought, wow, we get to hear her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she said, well, I wrote that poem as one of her best known poems. Well, that was, I was showing a friend how you do this particular technique.
Yeah, wild geese, I know.
Yeah, but she had something.
What a revelation.
She had something, as you pointed out, already inside her that was able to pour into that.
Yeah.
My sense with you is that it's the spiritual aspect of poetry that is why you love the poetry so much. What is it about?
Yeah. I don't interview poets about poetry for the most part. It's about where poetry comes from in us and what it is distinctively giving voice to that we don't give voice to with our other kinds of words, and what it works in us when we hear it or write it. And, you know, Mary Oliver was just that was just this gift in her, right? And she was really just like walking through the world as a receptacle with her notebook in front of her.
And she said she spent so long writing really bad poetry, but kept at it. She is speaking of pursuing
that thing,
calling.
That thing, yeah. Yeah. And she was constantly feeling, you know, had this sense of gift and of things that just, you know, were given. And, you know, how she would say also, like, you have to have your notebook with you at all times because you may get this poem right now. It won't be there half an hour from now when you get home. I have some favorite definitions that have helped me think about this too. So David White, the poet, says, poetry is language against which we have no defense. If you think about that, in this world we inhabit now, in these most highly public spaces where we are exchanging words with each other, and how it's all offense and defense, and that something about the form of a poem, you just can't argue with it. It may make you uncomfortable, like you may not know what to do with it, but it does not invite a fight. And I think poetry also has a way of raising questions that reminds us that questions sometimes are there to dwell with. Like, I think we think questions need answers right away.
Yeah.
But, you know, my best example of that is the poem that Elizabeth Alexander read at the first Obama inauguration. And she had this sentence, this question, what if the mightiest word is love? I think it's a question we're called to live. And boy, is it far from, like, I just mean, you know, the great collective we, like the American we, the global we are so far from that. But I don't think there's any question that love is the mightiest word and the hardest thing and the most worth it, the hardest skill. You know, the 20th century had this idea that the hard skills are, you know, computing and rationality and facts and numbers. They're nothing against, like, the ability to love or not to love.
Well, I love that poetry is that thing against we have no
defense.
Against
which we have no defense, yeah.
So if I can quote a line of poetry and a final question to you, again, from Mary Oliver, because you got her to be so forthcoming with the wild geese when she talks about this one wild and precious life and what you will do with it. So you have productive decades ahead of you. Unless you decide to go work on your tan on a beach somewhere.
No, I don't think there is Southern Baptist in me who's going to let me do that.
But you also have enough time and experience to have perspective on your own wild and precious life.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking you must be really happy about some of those struggles that you stuck with.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to turn 64 next month. I actually love aging. I think it's just like the best kept secret that it's such a relief to grow older.
I am 64 and I'm telling you, it's just fine.
I know. It's so great to relax and not need to prove yourself in the way that you do when you're younger. And you just know some things and you just know that it's messy and it's okay and it's just a given. Where I am now is asking how I best spend my energy and my life force. Yeah. And my energy's different than it used to be. And I wouldn't say it's less, but it's different. And I think, you know, it's interesting to me because right now, one of the things that gives me the most joy is, and I wouldn't have expected this, right, that across these 20 years, because I was looking for those people, I was looking for those people below the radar, like all over in all kinds of different fields, who are imprinting lives and like really being healing and creative forces in ways that still have to bubble up in culture, but are, you know, we just live in this time where so much that we got handed from the 20th century just doesn't make sense anymore. But we're like this in-between generation who have to make up the new forms. And I see that happening everywhere, but it's going to take time for all of that to become, you know, the reality that we can all see. And so the thing that's giving me such joy now is like having this view of who's out there and you know, people who are not necessarily visible on the larger canvas and connecting dots, like connecting people who should know each other and projects that should know each other. That is such a gift. And just every time I get to make those connections, create that connective tissue, that human connective tissue that feels, that's what all this was about, giving me this view and this capacity to do that. Now, I don't think that's the only thing, but that's where I am right now is asking, you know, and I'm also really interested now in what I'm calling quiet conversations. So conversations, because our culture, for so many reasons that I have a lot of compassion for, is just so hyper-reactive. There's so many things we need to talk about quietly and with tenderness, and it just can't happen in public. So I'm doing more that's like behind closed doors that, you know, will not be broadcast. And that also feels like an important calling. right now for me. So that's kind of where I am, is discerning the next step.
Krista Tippett, a lifetime of asking questions. I don't know if that, as a young person, would have sounded satisfying to you or not. You may have said, well, do I get any answers? But whether it was faith or on being how to be or looking mm-hmm. at how poetry speaks to us, calls to us, thanks mm-hmm. for your lifetime of questions and the answers they've given and the ones they've just left hanging for us to think about.
Yeah, thank you for this beautiful interview. Thank you. You know, it's so wonderful to be on this side of it and have it be and be with a wonderful conversation partner. Because you also, I mean, it's really, I've said this sometimes, that answers rise or fall to the questions they meet.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's what we see so much in the news is like, you know, the combative question or like the really simplistic question. It's just really hard to not be simplistic or combative back. But when the question is generous and searching and kind of ennobling and enlivening, then you just come back with all of that.
We just heard Krista Tippett about faith in the public radio sphere, and I loved her comment about how even Americans who don't profess a certain religion or faith tradition, a lot of them still pray. So her argument there was that faith does indeed have a place in the public media realm, which there's a lot of us out here that do have faith lives, so why shouldn't that be in the public space as well?
She talked about inviting people who, anyone from atheists to disaffected or just don't know, into the discussion of the moral dilemmas. How does your faith and your experience help you answer these dilemmas that we find ourselves in? And I love that approach because it seems to generate so much good thinking.
I just loved hearing her discussion of heroes and how the discourse around heroes doesn't really work for her. People don't have to be perfect in order to make impacts. And they don't have to be, as you said, Steve, they don't have to have stars announcing their birth. And her focus on people who are under the radar, people who are guiding and mentoring and helping other people, she's saying those are the people who make the world go round.
Yeah, and this beautiful question that really, I think, maybe not with the same words, that we ask ourselves all the time, how to make good as riveting as evil?
Yeah.
Because evil gives you an autonomic response in your body. Good doesn't always. You're like, oh.
So nice.
Well, the way we talk about good, we often assume that it's banal or it's boring. We just have to figure out a way to talk about it so that we're just as engaged.
Because so often it requires courage.
She also talked about mystery and how in her interviews with scientists, she loved that they had this vocabulary and this experience and almost a desire for the mysterious, the unknown. And there's a wonder and an awe in that. And so we can discern what we are able to, but there's also something to be said about revering the unknown.
Yeah, and she said with the scientists, as soon as they learned something, they had a whole new set of questions. And to their great joy, mm-hmm. her grandfather, for instance, a preacher, had been worried that uncertainty or more questions was not what we were after. In fact, please don't go there. And I love when I was asking her about God, she said, well, it's a really small word for what we're talking about. You are right about that. Many thanks to Krista Tippett for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katerina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If you love learning from people who have spiritual journeys they have traveled and are in the middle of, be sure you share one of these episodes and be sure and leave a comment or a review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook, InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon right here in Good Faith.
Hey friends, there's a new podcast out called Constant Wonder Kids, adapting stories from the Signal Award-winning podcast Constant Wonder. Constant Wonder Kids curates these stories into little adventures for your little explorers. Everyday moments become extraordinary nature explorations, diving deep into the ocean with whale sharks or cheering for tiny athletes at the Hedgehog Olympic Games. Perfect when your brain's got an itch that needs to be scratched? You can listen to Constant Wonder Kids on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.